Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
This is Bloomberg Business Week from Bloomberg Radio.
I'm Jason Kelly.
And I'm Carol Masser. Welcome to the Bloomberg Business Week Extra. It's our weekly podcast bringing you an in-depth interview you will not hear anywhere else. And this week we caught up with Susan Lyne, president and founder of BBG Ventures. Her career, man, it has spanned publishing, multimedia, and of course now she's a venture capitalist. She's also, though, the former president of ABC Entertainment. Jason, she saw time at AOL.com, director of the board of Gilt Group. Love catching up with her.
Yeah, it was a wide-ranging conversation, to be sure. The things she's seen and the things she's expecting to see are really, really interesting. Check it out.
Your career has spanned so many different industries and multimedia. I think about publishing, venture capitalism. I want to ask you, there's so much going on in these worlds. What is it that you find kind of interesting in terms of disruptive trends right now?
Oh, wow.
I know it's broad, but I just am curious.
There are so many things, and they fall into a couple of categories. So I still think that there are a lot of industries that are that have not been disrupted. Actually, healthcare is probably the biggest opportunity that exists right now.
Right.
There are still so many consumer unfriendly parts of the healthcare journey. And every single group at the table believes that we need to have new solutions, whether it's insurers or it's it's healthcare providers or it's consumers. So that's always a good moment to be investing. And we're actually seeing a lot of, I think, more interesting models for delivery of either mental health care or physical healthcare that will need to scale to prove themselves out, but could be very viable over time.
Well, and I looked at your investment portfolio. I mean, Susan, you guys are in a lot of different areas.
We
are. You're in retail, you're in, you know, property, you're in so many different areas. In terms of healthcare, what are some of the new models that you're seeing, or what are some of the interesting opportunities that you find that you want to commit money to and that you have?
Well, we've made a couple of investments. We're in a company called Spring Health that takes over healthcare coverage for employees. So they sell to companies. They say, let us do this for you. We will be able to get your employees to the right kind of care faster than you could possibly do it. And they do that using algorithms. They have a great database. And they can both save companies money, and at the same time, they can get employees the care they need so much faster that it's a real bonus for the company culture.
How difficult do you think, though, it is to kind of untangle the existing healthcare infrastructure? I think this is such a tough one, and I think it's why you're not seeing it one of the earlier cases of disruption. So how much, the traditional healthcare companies that we have today, will we ultimately, 5 years, 10 years, they're not going to be the major players because there's companies like the ones that you're investing in? Or do they adapt?
I think it completely depends on which part of this you're talking about. So I think the insurers are probably not going to change in the short term, but I think they are looking for more cost-effective and more successful solutions to a lot of different issues for consumers. So they're actually aligned with all of us.
Right.
If you can find the right product for them. If you can find something that you can show them, you're spending X now, we can do this for Y, and you're going to save money. So I think there are definitely alliances to be made. One of the biggest issues has been how slow it is to get change at large healthcare institutions, whether they're hospitals or they're. But there are far fewer providers, and so, and by that I mean insurance providers, that it's probably easier if you can find an alliance with them. Now, there are also a lot of companies that are starting clinics and new models for delivery of either women's health care or prenatal and postpartum care. They're taking some piece of this and they're saying, we can do this 100% better. And so I think it'll take time for those to scale up, but as startups, a lot of them are doing very well.
Right, and when it starts to show an impact on bottom lines or something, it's very easy for them to ramp up. I have to ask you about the media world, because I feel like there's so much going on. You're the former president of ABC Entertainment. Streaming wars, 2020, we're already laying it out in Business Week magazine. This is going to be one of the big themes to watch. Who will you be watching? There's Disney Plus, there's Apple Plus, Comcast's got Peacock, HBO's got a new entry.
Yeah.
Who do you think's interesting?
Well, I think Disney's really interesting. Now, I'm probably biased because I worked for the company for a decade.
Maybe.
But I do think they have unique assets, and that's one of the things Iger has done that I think has been incredibly smart. If you look at the movie business that Disney has, because of the companies they've acquired, because of Pixar, because of Marvel, because of the Star Wars franchise, they have, you know, I'm going to say more than half of the billion-dollar films that have come out in the last 5 years.
Right. And with big audiences who want to see it again and again, perhaps.
Exactly. And who know the franchise, right? So so they don't have to hear a long description of it before they know, hey, I want to watch this. And now with Fox, they have an even bigger library. So I think they're going to be hard to beat among the new entrants.
Right. And they're coming out pretty inexpensively. I think it's like $6.99, so it's easy to kind of tack that on.
Absolutely.
Is cable dead? Or getting slowly towards that. I mean, there's still like 80 million U.S. cable subscribers, but what happens?
You know, I think it's going to take time, but I look at my children, and they are not cable customers.
Yeah.
So this is largely a generational shift. I think that that people who have kind of grown up with digital assets and who understand how to use Apple TV and how to use Roku and can put together their own, you know, what would have been a cable assortment.
Right.
They can do that themselves for a lot less money.
Do their own bundling.
Exactly.
Although some say that you could ultimately see a bundling of streaming services down the road. Do you think that's
I think that's very possible.
Yeah.
Why not? Right?
So what about building a brand in this environment? You did it with Lifetime. You did it so well. It was a very clear message, ramped up, is so successful.
Yeah.
Can we do that again today? Building a brand like that?
On television?
Yeah.
In the broadcast or cable world? I think you can. I think that...
Tougher than?
Yes, it's definitely tougher, but it all comes down to programming, to be honest.
Yeah.
If you look at how every single one of the cable networks became successful, it's because they had a single show that defined what they were about, right? For HBO, it was The Sopranos.
Right.
For FX, it was Mad Men.
Right, right.
For Showtime, you can go through all
of
them.
Right, but you're right, so you knew what you were getting.
You did, and then once they realized they had an audience for that, they could begin to develop shows that had a similar feel or were for a similar group of people. And the the great thing about cable always was that it was not about the number of people watching, it was about the passion of the people who were watching. So if they really, really, really loved a show,
right,
that meant more than having an extra million people viewing it. Because it made it that much harder for a cable carrier to kick them off.
Right.
Because they'd have a revolution.
Right, right. And I also do think, like, in today's social media world where there's so much data collection, you had a very clear identity.
Absolutely.
So if you were trying to market it to advertisers, right, you knew exactly what you're getting.
So I think you're going to see that with the new streaming services, too, where initially a single show or a single series is going to define what this one is all about. And that's going to be what people kind of choose their sides with.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
I'm not sure if you got to watch any of Mark Zuckerberg today up on Capitol Hill. He talked a lot about Libra. It was the House Financial Services Committee. What do you think will happen to social media going forward and these big players? Or how do you see it? Should they be broken up, in your view?
I feel like I am not really the person to answer that question, but I do believe that there is too much power in too few platforms at this moment. And that's always dangerous. So whether they get regulated, whether they get broken up, that's for other people to decide. But I don't think you can leave things the way they are, where a single platform like Facebook has the power that it does.
BBG Ventures, are you finding all the opportunities you want? I mean, we talked before we got started that there's so much capital out there, whether it's private equity, family wealth offices, venture capital. Are you finding enough opportunities? Because I feel like there's a lot of money chasing the same thing.
Oh my gosh, we absolutely are.
Okay.
We've seen 5,000 companies with a female founder since we launched BBG Ventures 5 years
ago. And this is what you do. If you're making an investment, there has to be at least one female founder.
That's exactly
right.
Yeah. And we do that not to be a do-good organization, but because we think there's a real competitive advantage to having a founder who intuitively understands that end user. Women are the dominant consumer. We're responsible for 80-85% of all consumer purchases. So in all likelihood, if you are building a consumer product or you're building a consumer service, women are going to be the early adopters. They're going to be the people who determine whether or not you scale. And so we saw both an opportunity, because the rest of the venture capital world was focused on something else. We saw a big opportunity to invest in the best of these female founders.
I love to hear you say that. I know you've also been on corporate boards, are on corporate boards. I think it's getting a little bit better in terms of female representation. What do we need to do to get it much, much better? Where it's really parity, and there is, and when I think about it, it should be diverse on all levels.
Absolutely.
So,
no question.
What does it take to get there?
So,
we've been having this conversation for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. In my world now, the venture capital world, I think that it takes probably 5 to 10 female-founded companies going public, and maybe 5 to 10 exiting as unicorns, for there to be a major shift. We're already seeing a number of storied old boys club VCs bring on their first female partner, and it's all because of FOMO, right? It's because they fear they're going to miss the next wave of big successful companies. So you have to have somebody on your team, on your investing team, who has those networks, who knows those women, and who can make sure that your firm gets a chance to at least compete to invest. That's what's going to change it.
One last question. In terms of investing, you make investments, and I'm curious, is the end game still taking companies public, because we've seen what an interesting year with WeWork and disappointments over IPOs. What is the ultimate end game, or does that not have to be it anymore? Will it not be that
so
anymore?
I think that more companies end up getting sold than go public.
Okay.
And that's always been the case. I do think there are a number of female-founded companies out there that will go public during the next, let's call it 2 years, 3 years, that are on that trajectory, that are preparing themselves for it, and that are trying not to make the same mistakes. So the real issue for the companies that have gone public and have either failed
or not made it there.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Is that they were focused on growth over everything else. And they went public still losing billions of dollars, in some cases, billions of dollars a quarter.
Right.
And the public markets just said, we don't like this. So there was clearly a big disconnect between what the private markets value right now and what public markets are looking for. I think the female founders I've seen out there, they're watching this very closely. And so are every VC.
I bet.
And I do think that there are lessons that have been learned that you have to take seriously more than just, you know, X percent year over year growth. You really have to be able to show that there's a business model here that can be successful, even if you're not profitable right now, that there's a path to profitability that is very, very clear.
Which I feel like is, you know, MBA 101. Susan Lyne, thank you so much.
Yeah, it was fun.
And you've been listening to Bloomberg Business Week Extra.
Be sure to tune into Bloomberg Business Week live Monday through Friday at 2 p.m. Wall Street time on Bloomberg Radio. I'm Carol Masser.
And I'm Jason Kelly. Thanks for listening. This is Bloomberg.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.